Let's just take a few minutes. Let me get a little bit of feedback from you. Tell me if there was something that was especially helpful from yesterday, or if it raised a particular question, or if you have a thought like, gee, I hope she gets into this or that. Okay, so if there was something that was particularly helpful yesterday, if something that happened yesterday raised a question, or if you left thinking, gee, I hope tomorrow Jean talks about something or other.
Well, you gave me a thought yesterday when you were talking about the older women and the younger women, and there is no manuals, no books out about this subject, and I thought, why couldn't I go back to my church and kind of take a survey and put a manual together for our own group and make sure each woman has a copy so that we all know how to help one another.
Great. Good idea. Yes.
It's interesting because I was asked to speak at the New Mexico Christian Convention and women's workshop. And I sat down and thought about what is a topic that is really missing in the church. And this is exactly what I chose. I had even chosen the same scripture that you have. And so this is really exciting for me to be able to have this information material to glean from. So if it's okay with you, can I use some of this?
Absolutely. That's why you came to the conference, to get stuff you can take home with you. And if at the end of today's session, if you feel like there have been some things that you discovered that we left out, please feel free to share with the group, all of you. Anyone else?
Someone brought up about the single moms and all, and I know myself, I really haven't addressed this as much as I should within my own church, and if we could have any more helps with that.
Very good.
This is a little bit off of the main line, but it's very real to me. And especially in talking about the older women motivating them and such, I'm referring now to older
yes.
women and such. In the case of my own mother, she had a physical handicap a couple of years ago, and she has since just totally recovered physically, but not emotionally. And it's like impossible to get her to do anything that she used to do. And I feel like this is an issue that a lot of us with older parents and such, and older people in the church have to deal with too. How do you get somebody who has gotten emotionally down off of their sand and doing something instead of saying, I just can't do that anymore, I can't do anything, I can't do that?
Well, and maybe they're at a point where I think throughout our lives there are times when God is doing something in our lives where we do feel incapacitated. And so I think in this teaching on the older women, I am not proposing that every older woman should be doing this. But what is distressing me is that I see so few doing it. And so I think part of what we need to do is to help. We need to identify women who are qualified, who have something to share, and do what we can to create the atmosphere where they can do it. But I believe that because God is concerned with a broad scope of reaching the world, there may be some older women whose ministry will just be prayer. There will be some older women who will be doing volunteer work in the community. There will be some older women who are helping in the nursery. There will be a whole span of things. My concern is that this is, I believe, a critical need, and I feel there are so few that are doing this, so few older women helping the younger. Yes?
I appreciated what you said about the generations, and I would encourage you to stress that, because I think a lot of women feel that they should go to the workforce
stress, and I told my husband about that illustration you used. Where did you find that?
Which one?
The one about the 4-8 generation.
Oh, no, it was Hudson Taylor's family.
Is that where you read the story?
It was in a magazine written by the eighth generation who's serving the Lord, but it was in a magazine. And but it's the Taylor family, and Hudson Taylor was the fourth generation of those eight generations.
And may I make a comment to the lady who spoke? In our area, they are giving a lot of workshops on caregivers. Now, this is being done in a secular setting, but we as a church are considering doing it in the church because there are so many people with aged parents. This is becoming, and I think Swindoll mentions it too in his church, it's becoming quite an area of concern. It's almost another ministry.
Uh-huh. Okay, is there anything else? Any questions that this raised? Yes.
I think what really hit me was to get their values straightened out, because I know I have a problem with that some days. You know, the house is a mess and somebody drops in and you're like, oh.
Uh-huh.
But if you can really communicate that to especially the younger mothers where the toys are all over, and there's a time they'll find that the toys won't be all over and they wish they were. I think that's something that we need to get our priorities straight.
Good. Yes.
Does this type of ministry, is it incorporated into a church, regular church program? Because one of the things that I'm concerned about in Southern California is that most families are both mother and father work. The average price of a house rises to $200,000, so you can't afford to live there without both working.
Uh-huh.
And what really burdens me is I come from a background where we were out to church every night, and one thing I don't want to do is end up doing the same thing. And we got Awana and Sunday school, Sunday morning, we got Sunday night. And I don't want to put that stress on the family and say, okay, ladies' discipleship, another night a week, men's discipleship, another night a week. You know, the kids just get rotated around the
Yeah. Well, what I am sharing today is just what I'm doing. And this would just be one model for us to discuss. Older women helping younger can take legion forms. And it should. I really think it should. So what I'm sharing today is not to say this is the way I think it should be done. This is one way, and I think in going through the process of how I arrived at what would be the elements of what we do will help you just asking the questions you need to ask of the women that are in your church to come up with the right thing. Let's just take a minute. What do you see about the older women in that Paul thought important to mention? Pardon me?
Their lifestyle.
Their lifestyle. And what do you see about their lifestyle?
Probably talked about their conduct and about their conversation.
Their conduct and their conversation, okay? What else do you see here? Okay, and teach what? Yes, there are two different words here, teach and train, and it's different than the Titus teaching them. And the concept for the older woman is more the idea, not just talking, teaching, but the idea of communicating through the whole spectrum of life. And so it isn't that the woman necessarily has to have a gift in teaching, but it's the idea that where you would, it would bring in the idea of modeling that we talked about. It would talk, It would bring in the idea of actually teaching. It could bring in the idea of just having someone with you where they're observing your life, hospitality. It's a whole range of things. So it isn't just that the woman has to be a teacher in the way that we often think. What else do you see?
In order to teach what is good, they have had to live that way. It's almost like he's telling them to get out of the slothful pattern they're developing and get back to living the way they can show it in their lives.
Okay. One, it's interesting that he is to be teaching them to be reverent in the way they live, to live lives worthy of their calling in God. And as we were mentioning, their speech and their conduct, he's to be helping them. One of the women mentioned that the older women in her church are very critical of the younger women because they came from a background where they grew up being disciplined, and they trained their children, you know, not to scream in church and not to climb on the pulpit and, you know, all these things. And so then they see a younger generation where they feel like they just let their kids run wild. I don't want anything to do with them. So part of teaching the older women is to be able to say, you know, you came from a Christian background and from a heritage where to discipline your children, that was just something that you assumed. Some of these young couples in our church come from backgrounds where they have not seen that modeled. And not only will they not do a good job with their own children, but then their children won't have any idea either of how to discipline. And so this is an opportunity for you, but I think sometimes we have to help the attitude of the older women as well as giving them certain skills or opportunities. So part of responsibility of the pastoral leadership is to be teaching the older women the right attitudes, guiding them into living in a way that is loving and reverent, and that they are controlled in their speech and in their conduct, in their tongue and in their appetites. And this whole idea of teaching what is good, part of what the pastoral leadership of a church may have to do is to be holding before the women of the church, what is good? Because we live in a society where that really gets blurred. And another, if you go through the book of Titus, if you circle the word teach and good, goodness, it's everywhere. And it, so it's a wonderful study to go through. So we need to teach what is good. Then they can train the younger women. So here again, it is, when I'm talking about the older women, I'm not necessarily talking about women whose children are all gone from home or women in their 60s or 70s. There may be women in their 30s who are the older, who can be the older woman to someone and to help them. And then let's look at the curriculum of what is good. What are they to use as their curriculum? Well, they are to love their husbands. That's part of the curriculum. Love their children. This is what you teach them. This is what is good. To be self-controlled. To live a pure life. To be busy at home. This is translated in various ways. And most of the commentators do not go into lots of detail, but I think it's the idea of being keepers at home, managing your home, to be kind, to be subject to their own husbands. Why? Why do we go to this trouble? To bring glory to God, to keep the word of God from being maligned or spoken poorly of. Well, see, you're learning a lot just from observing, aren't you? And I think that's one of the things that we need to do in helping the teaching the younger women is we need to help them be learners. And a disciple is a learner. And so we need to help them learn how to learn from other people. Now, there's some people that are easy to learn from. You know, if they're funny and if they're, and you know what I mean, there are all kinds of things that certain people say, I really respond to that. But to keep your eyes open and notice things. And sometimes it takes a long time for people to kind of, for things to kind of finally gel in their minds. But that's one of the things we can be teaching the younger women is to be learners, to watch. And sometimes, like if you made a comment like that, you have learned from observing. That is just opens a door, perhaps, for some women who never even noticed. Do you see what I'm saying? So, okay. Yeah. You hit a brick wall?
Yeah, you described teach real well. But on training, is that something you do for a race, or that's something you do with that dog? There's real strict guidelines. Is there a difference in the definition between teaching and training?
Well, what I'm saying is the pastor teaches the older women to do these things. That's a different word.
Older women train younger ones.
And the idea is more the idea of the whole spectrum of life. It isn't just somebody teaching you, you know, telling you something, but it's the idea of that they would learn from your role model, from maybe just being with you. There would be a whole spectrum of things. It isn't just a teaching ministry, a verbal ministry.
I'd like to make just one comment.
Mm-hmm.
I think that younger women really need to be encouraged, young married women, that it takes a long time to become as efficient. I remember in my early married years, my husband and I were working in the church, and I felt very overwhelmed by the aspect of life because she was so efficient.
Yeah.
She was always encouraging me to do more. Therefore, mm-hmm. I felt very inadequate. And like I could never do enough.
Yeah.
And now that I've been married 12 years, some of these things are beginning to be easy for me, and I
yes.
can do more things.
Yeah.
And I look back at that and think, I needed encouragement. Mm-hmm. You know, it takes mm-hmm. a lot of time to
yes.
put together, learning how to cook, how to take care of the home and all that.
That's right.
And I don't think that young women sometimes are like that. I didn't.
Very good. That's excellent. And another thing, I think what we need to be doing is helping women who have young children to say no to things so that they can give themselves to the thing that God has called them to. And I've got so many different things, it's almost like circles are overlapping. And so if some of my comments, you hear them twice, you'll know that, just forgive me, will you? But one of the things with the young women that from my church that I'm meeting with is I keep trying to have them go to the Lord saying, Lord, what should I be doing and what should I not be doing? This year, our second year together, I said if this was the last year that we would have together, what would you think would be something very important that we should cover? Well, they said, we would really like to know how to help another woman. Well, of the seven women that I'm meeting with, six of them are homeschooling. So they are, and I didn't know that when the group got together, so they are women with a high demand on them. And I told them, I said, you know, that's something I'd really like to share with you, but I'm a little bit fearful that if that becomes the emphasis of our time together, that you will launch out into areas too soon and neglect the responsibilities at home or have yourself so thin that you're not having the kind of time with the Lord that you need. And so with that understanding, we've launched into some of these things. But I feel that part of my responsibility as an older woman is to be saying to them, Colleen, are you doing too much? What are you doing now? You know, and trying to look at her schedule with her, because women who are conscientious and have a good heart can see every need as a call of God on their lives, which it isn't. And so to try and help them see that work is infinite. There is always more that you could do. There is no end. And we are a society that knows more about the needs of the world than any people ever in the history of the world. We know needs in our own family, in our own church, in our neighborhood. We know needs in Jamaica. We know needs in Ethiopia. I mean, there is no end to what we could do. Work is infinite, but time is finite. God gives us 24 hours a day, maybe 75 years, whatever. And Jesus had essentially 3 years of public ministry. And he said at the end, I have finished the work the Father gave me. He had left people unhealed. He had left people unpreached to. He had, if you go through the Gospels and look to see what Jesus did not do, what he said no to is quite a study. And so I try to pull the reins in on these women and help them focus their lives. And I remember when my children were small, being pressured to go on campus to minister. And I really felt I shouldn't because of the contribution I wanted to make in the family. And my husband has said in later years, it was the fact that you didn't spread yourself thin in those years and that you really gave yourself to the family that you have a message today, and that the women who were doing all kinds of things, a lot of them don't have anything now at this point where they feel that, you know, they can share. Okay, so much for that. How do we get off on all these sidetracks? Okay, what I'd like to share with you is how I got started on this Titus 2 group. And I will share a little bit and then I'll stop. So if I raise a question for you and you think, I want her to say more about that, what does she mean by this? Or exactly how did you go about it? Jot down some notes and I'll work through a little bit and then we'll open it up for discussion. But I think often in workshops you feel you've been motivated and stimulated, you'd like to do something, and once you leave you felt, I didn't get enough specifics to be able to implement it in the way I'd like. So hopefully this will be that way. I was thinking, Lord, I'm in my late 40s. I don't know how many years you have left for me. What contribution would you have me make to the body? And what are the needs in the church today where maybe I could make some small contribution? And I was thinking in my own church in particular. And this idea of the older women teaching the younger, I just felt, yes, I believe that is a grave need. And as I started, I do some speaking around in different places, and so as I was in different cities, as I talked to pastors, I was finding out that this was a real concern to them. And they were finding a great scarcity of older women to teach the younger women in the church. So I looked at the verse and I thought, okay, Paul tells Titus to start with the older women and teach the older women these things so that they in turn can have an influence in the lives of the younger women. So I started thinking, okay, should I gather together a group of older women from my church? Okay, now if I were going to do that, how would I pick the women? What would be the problems I would face? Where would they be as far as feeling a lack towards this type of ministry? How would I even go about equipping and mobilizing them for the task? And some of the things that we talked about yesterday came to mind. I thought, you know, for a lot of these women, even the very godly women, they have never articulated, even to themselves, what they did, why they did it, tied it to a scripture or anything. I mean, that is not a process that, because most of them didn't grow up in small group Bible studies and all where they were talking to women, they did not have the kind of setting to develop this skill of articulating what they were learning, and so a lot of them don't even remember what the lessons were. Now, this does not invalidate their contribution. I was with a black woman who has a ministry in Chicago, and she was asking me about discipling, and she's had quite a ministry in the housing projects in Chicago on the south side, and she said, I don't know much about this discipling. All I know is prayer and faith. And I thought, you know, is there anything else, you know? And so for a lot of these women, perhaps they'd say, all I know is prayer and faith. And so they have a tremendous amount to contribute, but they may not be able to articulate it. So I thought about, should I start there? Then I thought, should I start with a younger group of women that would be more middle group? And I thought through on that group. I thought, okay, now, how would I choose which of these women would be the ones to get together with? What problems would I face with this group? And how would I go about equipping and mobilizing them to help? And as I thought through the elements of that group, then I thought, would there be a value, a benefit, in starting with women who still have children at home, where I could be having an input, helping them raise their children, helping them articulate all along the way what they're learning, giving them a framework from which they would be able to build kind of an arsenal to become the older women. And I finally decided that I would start with that group. Well, in my church, we had a MOPS group. How many of you are familiar with MOPS? Okay, a MOPS is Mothers of Preschoolers. And it's a group that meets twice a month in the mornings, and the churches provide nursery for the mothers. And they meet for a time of teaching and craft and a bit of discussion around the teaching. And I was the teaching leader in my church for MOPS. And one of the young women came up to me and she said, you know, I feel a need to be in an accountability group. Do you know of one that I might, you know, through the navigators, do you know of one that I might get into? And so I said, well, Patty, let me call you. I've been thinking about something. I shared with her this idea of a Titus II group, of being the older woman teaching the younger women. And she said, oh, that sounds great. Well, the next time we got together, she gave me a list of women that she thought would be the ones that should be in the group. And what I did was I took Patty's list. I decided that what I wanted to do with the group, I decided I would not start with just as broad a group as wanted to come. Because I thought part of what I want to do is to give a model to the younger woman of something she might be able to do when she's a little older. Now, I think, how many women feel free standing in front of a group speaking? Not too many. So I thought, what I'm going to do is I'm going to make it the size that will fit around my dining room table. So there are eight of us, seven of them and myself. And so I thought, now, what I want to do is to, as much as possible, keep this something that they could either duplicate or adapt. And so that's, I'm giving you the background of my thought process, of where I started, how I decided what I would do. So I invited these seven women to come, and I did a little bit of teaching just on Titus 2 when we got together, and told them of my my burden, that it seemed that that this was a grave need in the church, that there weren't older women teaching the younger, and I shared some of what I've just shared with you on how I decided to form the group with women who still had children at home. And I shared with them some of what pastors had been telling me about the need in their church. And I talked to them a little bit about our society. How many of them had mothers or sisters in the town where they lived? And I think this is another reason why this is such a grave need. Young women today do not have the kind of support system that that most young women had, say, 30 or 40 years ago, where if they wanted to go to something, their mother could keep the children, or they had somebody readily to call and say, you know, Johnny's just driving me crazy, you know, what do I, you know, this kind of a situation. And so women are much more isolated. I talked to a young woman in Tampa who said she is the only woman she knows of in her greater neighborhood that's home during the day. And she said, I take my kids to the park all different times during the day, hoping to see another mother and her kids. And she said, our neighborhood's like a ghost town during the day. And so there's a great need. Okay, then I told them, I have four objectives for this group. My first objective is just to nurture you, to take care of you. You are at a high demand time in your lives. Two of the women had husbands out of work. One had lost a baby. One had a daughter that we believe God has cured of an incurable brain disease. There were just all kinds. There was another one had lost a baby, and another's, that same woman's daughter was in a body cast because she fell out of a swing. And there were all kinds of things that were very, I mean, it was a difficult time in life. Plus, they all had children at home, and a number of them were homeschooling. And I said, you are giving all the time, and I just want to take care of you. Well, they all started crying. So from then I learned, when you have this kind of a group, what you use as a centerpiece is a box of Kleenex, you know. And we just had to stop for a while because they were all crying, because that meant such a need for them to feel that there was someone whose primary objective was to take care of them. My second objective, I told them, is to share with you what I've learned over the years, especially in the areas of this Titus 2, 3 to 5 curriculum. What I've learned about loving my husband and loving my children, of being self-controlled and pure, of being a keeper at home, a manager of my own home, and I just went through the list. My third objective was to give them an opportunity to minister to each other. Now, part of the way I organized this, our Titus II group, was to give these women an opportunity to be articulating what it was that God was teaching them. Because I saw that as one of the greatest felt needs of women in the middle group and the older group. They feel like, I wouldn't know what to say. And so I wanted to make sure that part of our time together, that our time together was designed in a way that these women would be sharing, articulating what it was that they were learning. And my thought was, and this did happen, one would be sharing, and then the next week somebody would say, oh, Colleen, what you shared last week, I have not been able to get that out of my mind. That has helped me so much. I wanted them to see that God could and would use them. And I felt that that was important to them becoming women who would involve themselves, who would take that step to be involved in the lives of younger women. So that's my third objective. My fourth objective was that someday they would become women who would share with younger women. But I felt it was very important that I put that at the very end. That was the fourth objective, the objective with the least immediate application. Okay, does that raise any questions to you?
Yes.
Good. Okay, well, now I'm going to get into the nuts and bolts. If you've got a Titus II group list, how we'll approach it about halfway down. Yeah. Oh, did I not pass these out? Oh, that's the reason none of you have these. Let's see. Would you like to pass to this side and you to this side and do this? Well, that I thought I saw some blank faces out there. Okay. Pardon me? Well, it's interesting. Since we've done this, one of the women in the group, she said, the reason I did not like to come to the Women's Missionary Society meetings, the reason I did not want to come is now the reason I want to come. A year ago, I didn't want to come to these meetings because it was all older ladies. Now that's the reason I do want to come. I thought that was interesting. Well, I don't know to what degree, but okay, does everybody have the two sheets? Okay. Okay, you should have one sheet that says Titus 2, 3 to 5 group, And one that's a group that's a Bible study page. That says Matthew 11:28-30.
What age are you speaking? I mean, do you feel you have to be your age or your age to teach?
No, not at all. That's what I was trying to say. Okay. It's to teach younger women. And it may not even be age-wise. It may be spiritual maturity. And so I don't think age alone is the factor in this.
Well, I found that in our particular church group, you know, it's like if I don't do it, nobody's going to start this.
Mm-hmm.
And I don't feel like I'm qualified.
Well, and you may be able to identify older women to help that where you draw on them as a resource. Okay, Titus 2:3-5 group. Sorry that I didn't give this to you before. I was assuming you were following along with me. Okay, we decided to meet twice a month because I thought, now, I want them to be doing some Bible study preparation. They are already so, they all are involved in the church. They have the homeschooling. This is a high demand period of their lives. And so I thought twice a month. And I decided that we would meet from 7 to 8:30 and have the dads keep the kids. So I knew that there was, I knew that money was a factor for many of these couples and that they couldn't have a babysitter. I thought, now, if we wanted to have this in the church might pay for a babysitter, but they wouldn't want me just to have it with eight women. And I really felt that I wanted to have it in my home, around the dining room table, to model something small and intimate and low-key and that scale, not a meeting or a program. And this was my thought, and I laid out some tentative dates. We started in September, mid-September, to give them an opportunity to get started on their homeschooling. And we do not meet at all the month of December. And we quit. We don't meet in May because I think May is as busy a month as December. So it's a controlled meeting type thing. Now, one of the things that I did, like I heard you all giggle when I said, you know, we have the husbands babysit. I had them, after I went through the thing on how we'll spend the time, I asked them for their reactions. Were you hoping this would be something different than what it is? What I was trying to get the feel was, okay, this is after I've gone through how we'll spend the time. I tried to get their reactions. And what I wanted to feel out was, you know, when you see a workshop being offered at a conference like this, all of a sudden my mind starts racing with what I think that's going to do for me. And often I leave a workshop disappointed because they took such a different track than I was thinking. You've all experienced that. So I wanted to see if when these women thought they were coming, when they were going to consider coming to a Titus II group, did they have something very, very different in mind? So I wanted to get their reactions. Well, they said, oh, this just sounds wonderful. And I had punched holes in the sheets that I gave them that night. And one said, you punched holes. Telling you this for you to get an idea of the response of these women. I said, what you need to do, I don't want any of you to say yes or no tonight. You we'll get together in 2 weeks. But in the meantime, I want you to go home and I want you to talk to your husband. And I want you to go over this with him, what we'll be doing, why we'd be meeting. And I want you to see what he thinks, whether he would be willing to keep the kids for that block of time twice a month. And if you're, you know, if this is something that your husband isn't willing to do, I need, you know, if this is going to be something where he's feeling bent out of shape, I want to know that. I try to shoo the women out as close to 8:30 as possible. We met last night, and I said, gals, we don't want to abuse those husbands. They're so neat for doing this. So, I mean, we could go on for hours, but I really try and cut it off so that they can get home and relieve their husbands of keeping the kids. Then I said, you need to look at your schedule. You need to, with your husband, look at what you're doing. What are the commitments you have? Do you have time both for this meeting twice a month and for the preparation? Because you don't want to be in the group if you don't come prepared. Do you need to drop something that you're doing if you're going to be a part of this? Do you need to adjust your schedule in some way? But I wanted them to go over this with their husbands before we decided whether or not we would continue in this vein. Okay, so how we approach this. Each time we get together, I do 10 or 15 minutes of teaching on topics related to Titus 2, 3 to 5, using that as my curriculum. We do Bible study, and it's Bible study that they prepare for. Now, what I wanted to do with these women was, what I'm sharing is not that I think this is the best way, this is the only way, this is a way. And I had certain objectives in mind. As I looked at these women, I thought, I do not want to burden them with heavy preparation. They just don't have the time. But I want to do some things that will enrich them beyond just that one time that they come, you know, each time that they come. So I decided that we would not use Bible study booklets or anything. We would just use the Bible for our Bible studies. And that my one objective the first year was to expose them to some different ways of digging into the scriptures so that they would learn some skills that they could do no matter where they were, and they could adapt these to how much time they had. So one of the types of Bible studies, this is the second handout, was a verse analysis Bible study. So we, for the first study, it was Matthew 11, 28-30. And I said, now, what you want to do is you want to read the chapter in which this verse is found, and if you need to, read chapters before and after to put this verse into context. Read the passage, discern the setting, who's speaking, to whom is he speaking. Allow the surrounding verses to shed light on your questions regarding the passage. So they set the verse in context. Then I told them from this Matthew 11, 28-30 to choose key words from the verse and look them up in the dictionary. It can so enrich your understanding, especially of familiar verses. Then I suggested that they read the verse in other translations. And what I had done was I had Xeroxed that verse from about 5 different translations that I had on one page and gave to them, so that in case they did not have a variety of translations, they could benefit from this list. I said, now, when translators go to the original language, there are often words that there aren't English words or phrases that that are just perfect. And so as you read these different translations, you will see the areas where the translators were struggling to find the right words. And so by taking this phrase from these different translations and looking at it, and you'll see there's slight shades of difference in the way they've translated it, you will get a fuller idea of what the Greek idea of the word is without ever studying Greek. So that was up that. Then, paraphrase the verse. Write the verse in your own words. Ask questions. What questions do you have? And then meditate on the verse in relationship to other verses. That's cross-referencing. I gave them a few in one direction, but you could take this verse in lots of different directions in cross-referencing. But ask questions. Then look at the context of the verse. Look at the cross-references and see if it helps you answer some of the questions that have come up. Then I suggested use the minute. Your lives are busy. One of the things I do with my Bible study is I keep it in a manila folder, and I carry it around with me. And so if I'm going to pick up the kids at school, I throw it on the seat. Well, I may get there a few minutes early, and even though it's not that I'm writing something down, I just open it up, and it keeps me in that passage. And so I'm trying to build the skill in them. You know, sometimes I don't even open it, but just the fact I see it sitting on the kitchen counter reminds me of the verse that I'm working on. So I'm trying to encourage them to use the minute. And then application. This is a very important part of your study. We need to be changed, not just enlightened. Write briefly. What does it say? What does that mean? What do I think the Lord would have me do about it? And then, don't force it. Sometimes you may not have a written application. So I'm trying to get them away from the idea of, I've got to crank out another application, whether anything struck me. You see what I'm doing? Okay, so I gave them this, and this was the first Bible study we did. For four times together, we did this type of a Bible study. I would just give them the verse, and they would go through this process with the verse and memorize the verse. Any questions to this point? The other types of Bible study that I exposed them to was a limited topical study. We studied the tongue, the fear of the Lord, and joy. But if you were going to study the fear of the Lord in all the Bible, it would be too big a chunk for a two-week study with these women who are already in a very demanding time of their life. So I picked, I think, about 15 verses. And about 15 verses on the tongue. And had them do a limited topical study on these verses. And then we did a study, a character study on the book of Ruth. Had them look, what are her strengths? What are her weaknesses? What is the setting of her life? What are the lessons you learn from Ruth? This type of a study. Then we did a chapter analysis study, analyzing a chapter, and we spent 3 weeks on John 15. I didn't want to overwhelm them, and this is a rather heavy study, and I also wanted to just teach them a few skills at a time. So this is, any questions about Bible study? Okay. I will get back to this because, let's see if I can find my thing. Maybe I'll just do it now. Hold on here just a second. When we got together the first time to actually do the study, I may not be able to find this page. I asked them, well, how did you enjoy your Bible study? Just get reaction. And we went through, we took the study time, took the time in the first meeting after they had done a study to go through this whole thing. I'd say, okay, what is the context of this verse? And we talked through each of these elements. I'd say, what was the definition that you got for one of these words that really enriched your understanding? And so they're reading some of their dictionary definitions. How did reading different translations, how did that give more understanding to your study? Give them an opportunity to share. And so we just work through each of these the first time, just so that if they had any questions on any of the elements of the study, we could bring it up. So I said, tell me, how did you, you know, did you have trouble finding time to do your study? Did you do it in one big chunk? Did you do it in lots of little bits and parcels? What did you learn that might be helpful to others? What was the greatest problem? Trying to get them to articulate what they were learning, what were problems, and where we could learn from one another and benefit from one another's experience. The first year, we memorized all our verses in the NIV. This was one of those things where I wasn't sure how to do it. But I've been in groups where you review your verses, and people say, oh, you're going to mix me up because I'm in a different translation. Or, can I go first? Can I go first? Because, you know, if I hear the others, then I'm not going to be able to say mine. Well, it's a very, very self-orientation. And just lost my earring here. So I thought, well, I don't want that. So what we did that first year was we all memorized in the same translation and we'd review in different ways. Sometimes we'd group up into twos and review our verses together. Sometimes I would do something like, the person on your right, this is after we've gotten, maybe 6 or 8 verses, you know some of what's happening in the person's life on your right. Look through your verses, think through your verses that we've memorized, and give them a verse for this week. And they would just turn to that person and quote one of the verses. Sometimes I would say, I would give hypothetical situations, and I'd say, what verses from our arsenal are verses that you could share with somebody in this situation? And that was a way of reviewing our verses. So things like this. Okay. Because an hour and a half goes very fast, sometimes we don't always review our verses. We don't always have time to pray together or share prayer requests. But these are elements, opportunities for them to share. I mentioned yesterday that sometime I'll be talking on the telephone with one of the women, and she'll say, oh, that verse last time was just perfect for me. I mean, you must have had me in mind when you picked, you know, and she goes on. I say, well, tell me specifically what. And so she'll share with me. And I'll say, that is marvelous. Will you share that when the group gets together? And I try to give her a time limit. Could you do this in less than 5 minutes? Give them a little bit of background so they know where you're coming from. And put it in, write it out, make some notes so that you can communicate it clearly and concisely. Because you know how easy it is to ramble all over the place. And so I feel that part of what I'm helping them do in sharing is to learn to articulate things, because if they do and people say, oh, that was so good, they will remember it, perhaps for years, to share it with younger women. And it's the kind of thing that they can really use to minister. Modeling. Without telling them that I'm doing it, I try to plan our time together so that there are things that I'm doing with them that they could do with their own families, as well as being a model for them of things that they could use, they could adapt to use with women as they minister in the future. Okay, I'm going to... I see that the men give their seminar a break. How about if you all just take a 5-minute break, if you want to get a drink or stretch your legs or whatever, and we'll, it is, I have 3 minutes after. Why don't we take 5 minutes and then we'll continue. Great. Oh, sure, sure.
I asked her if she had it, and she said no. So.
Oh, great.
They're coming out tonight, so it's good. I was going to share with you, too. I talked to my daughter. I called my daughter in Houston yesterday. I said I'd gone to your seminar and read the telling of the book.
Uh-huh.
I said she's also written the book on mothers that I'm going to buy and give you. She said, is it Mother's Vision? I said, yes.
But that's the name a Mother's Heart.
A Mother's Heart.
Yeah.
She said, is it a Mother's Heart? I said, yes. She said, well, I've read it. She said she went to the bookstore to get a book that Eugenie Price had written. She reads all of Eugenie Price.
Uh-huh.
She's into
uh-huh.
that. And she was looking for the new one, When Darkness Falls or something mm-hmm. like that. And she said, there with the fiction books was this book, A Mother's Heart. And she thought, that must be a new fiction. So she thought it picked it up and realized it wasn't. But she said, oh, that looks good. I'm going to buy it anyway. So because your book got put in the wrong section, she got
great. Oh, we're good.
And she was so excited about it. She said, oh, I read that book. It's just been very helpful.
Oh, great.
So I thought you.
Good. Well, it's like always encouraging to know
how the
Lord used
provided
it.
That book for her when it wasn't even in the right section.
Okay.
Good.
I'll do that. Good. Hi. I think I have a friend that you might remember. Marty Wiederholt, she used to be our navigator.
Yes, sure do. I know Marty real well.
Good. She always highly recommended your book. In fact, she gave me your book, Mother's Heart, when I was having my third.
Oh, and let's see, Valerie.
And that was when she was in Berkeley.
Uh-huh.
So they came to our church.
Oh, great. Yes. Oh, good. And what church are you in?
We're now in Brentwood, which is up towards Sacramento, mm-hmm. more on the Delta.
Oh, great. Well, good.
Now, do you still live in Seattle then?
No, we live here.
You live here?
Uh-huh.
Oh, okay.
And we've been here for 4 years, but we had been in Seattle for 6.
Mm-hmm.
So, yeah, well, great. Okay. And you have how many children?
I have 4 now.
4. What are their ages?
11, 9, 6, and 5. And I also homeschool them.
Mm-hmm.
So yes, I can identify with
I know, I know. I'm sure you can. You've got a busy...
Yeah,
busy time.
It was real helpful what you shared
with us
as far as not over scheduling, because
mm-hmm.
I always have a really burdened heart for the mothers, but I always feel real limited in what
mm-hmm.
I can do right,
right.
now. So.
Yeah. Well, and sometimes by your example of restraint, you're teaching certain
I'm
things
hoping.
That you couldn't. You could talk to them mm-hmm. about restraint, but if you weren't doing, you know.
Mm-hmm.
So yeah, that's good. Great.
I appreciate it.
Good.
I want to tell you that I'm 80 years old.
No.
And yes, and you had this lesson just exactly for me. But I'm 80.
I can't believe it.
I sure
am. Your skin is just beautiful. Yeah. How did...
Oh, I've used cosmetics all my life, you know, and I think that helps.
Uh-huh.
But I wanted to tell you one of the things that we have done in our church to help the young girls is that it was about 13 of us got together, and we made up some books, and it was for funeral dinners, like September and October, but that's one committee that you have to be on. We took every woman from the church and divided them up in tens, and they were responsible for any fellowship dinner or any funeral dinner. And that has brought out the girls with babies. Then we always had the babysitter when they had them.
Huh.
But there was five or six of us that was doing all the work.
Yeah.
And all the time.
Yeah.
So we decided that we'd get the rest of the church working, so that's what we did.
Great.
But I just wanted to tell you.
Now you're in Kansas,
uh-huh.
huh?
Mm-hmm.
Oh, so great.
It's about 50 miles west, southwest of Dodge City. Everybody knows Dodge City, I think.
Now, are you a pastor's wife?
Yes, mm-hmm. and no.
Uh-huh.
Les graduated with Midwest Christian College uh-huh. as a minister.
Mm-hmm.
Had 5 years and he's got his BTH. And then he preached for quite a while. But when we were married, my first husband died of a heart attack. So when we were married, I had a business and he's been into the business.
Uh-huh.
Why do you want to tell Sharon?
Yes, sure. Let's see, for you, Pat? Mm-hmm. Is it for you? And you have how many children? Do you have kids at home?
I have an 18-year-old and a 13-year-old.
Great. Let's see, where am I? Yes. Right, right. I maybe should say that. Make that clear. Yes, that's what I'm going to do next.
Tell us if they ate or not.
If they what? Eight? Oh, good. I'll answer that. Okay, good. Okay, shall we start? Okay, one question. Did they eat? We didn't eat. I had hot water, and I set out my boxes of herbal tea. And they would get a cup of tea. One reason that I did not have us eat is, again, I want to model something that won't overwhelm them. And sometimes when you think that you have to bake before everything, it just seems like, oh, just can't, you know, do the preparation and the baking and everything. And so we did not eat. We had a cup of herbal tea. And one time we did have a treat, but that was part of communicating the message. We had done Bible study on Philippians 3:10. You know, I want to know Christ and the power of his resurrection and the fellowship of his sufferings. Well, what I did that day was when they came in, they got their tea and sat at the table, and I had... I can't remember what the treat was, but it was little treats. And I stuck toothpicks with, like, paper flags on the toothpicks. And I sent around two trays. One tray had all kinds of
qualities, the kinds of qualities that you think, oh yes, that's a quality of Christ I really want to experience. You know, power and love and kindness and joy, and it was all these kinds of words were on there. And so as the women are, as the tray comes around, they're picking, you know, one of these that maybe says, oh, love, yes, you know, love. And well, then the next tray that I passed around had flags on too, but it was words like persecution, suffering, death. And so it was, so we just talked about how easy it is to want to partake, to think, I want to know Christ and the fellowship, the power of his resurrection. But we often don't want to move on to the rest. So the only time we had a snack was for a reason. Okay? And let's see. Someone asked, the verse we memorized, yes, it was the verse that we did Bible study on. Often, most of the time, when we did verse analysis, they would memorize that verse. When we did a topical, say on the tongue, I said, pick any verse from the study. So I gave them a little bit of an option. And so sometimes I gave them the verse. Occasionally I let them choose. Okay, another question was just what I was going to go on to, is to give you an example of the kinds of things I did teaching on. One of the things I did was out of the Amplified, I Xeroxed a page of the Bible, and for the verse, Ephesians 5:6-33. Now, in the Amplified, you know this is the passage where he's talking about the wife and the husband relationship being that it's to be modeled after the relationship of Christ and his church. And so the verse says, however, let each man of you, this is Amplified, without exception, love his wife as being in a sense his very own self, and, now here's the part for the wife, and let his wife, let's see, and let the wife see that she respects and reverences her husband, that she notices him, regards him, honors him, prefers him, venerates and esteems him, that she defers to him, praises him, loves and admires him exceedingly. So I just taped that on a page, and they had room for notes. And the teaching that I did was basically, I told them that early in our marriage, I did a little study on this verse. Now, one thing I didn't mention, all the Bible study verses, that all the Bible study that we did was geared to enriching their relationship to the Lord. The verses that I chose were not ministry verses. They were not even verses on taking care of your family. All the verses that I chose were to nurture them in their relationship to the Lord. But my teaching was all based on this as my curriculum, loving their husbands and their children, being self-controlled and pure, being managers of their home, being kind, being subject to their own husbands. So that's how I, the first year, how I worked it. So I shared with them that early in our marriage, I had done a little study on this verse, and I had used the Amplified and had looked up all these words in the dictionary. And then told them about an application that I had made. Now, let me see. Two things stood out to me as I did mine, and I chose two of these areas. One is she notices him. And
I prayed, Lord, help me to be aware of the way that you've made my husband and his good qualities. And I remember hearing of a missionary wife who was struggling in a relationship to her husband and was talking to another missionary wife that I know, and she was saying, I just don't see any good in him anymore. I just can't think of anything. And the other woman said, you know, well, your husband is highly esteemed in the mission community. And she started sharing things that people, things about him. And said, I want you to go home and I want you to make a list. And I want you to keep adding to it of qualities that you can admire in your husband. And so I asked God, help me to notice Roger. And I thought, you know, a person is like a diamond. You know, when you have a diamond and you hold it in the light, the facets keep reflecting different colors. And I thought, not only if you were able to think of your husband that way, where you're looking at him from different angles, but to think that people are always changing. I'm not the same woman that my husband married. He's not the same man I married. We have grown and developed. We have some of the same weaknesses. But we're always, people are dynamic. They're always changing. And I said, Lord, help me not to get in a rut of just seeing the way he is right now and not having my noticing grow as he grows. And help me to notice all these different areas of what he's like. And then the other thing that stood out to me was she notices him. The other is she praises him. And I said, Lord, help me not only to notice things about Roger, but then to be able to share those with him. Because it seems that what a man needs is the expressed appreciation of his wife, the person who's closest to him. And that's what God has asked me to do. Well, I thought, okay, what are different areas where I can appreciate him and express that? I thought, okay, physically. Now, it's always been interesting to me as you go through Proverbs to see that the woman who is trying to seduce men, the harlot, how often they mention her speaking to the men. This is Proverbs 5:3. For the lips of an adulteress drip honey, and her speech is smoother than oil. Proverbs 6:24 goes on about, you know, be in God's commandments so that they'll keep you from the immoral woman, from the smooth tongue of the wayward wife, the adulteress. 7:21, with persuasive words she led him astray. She seduced him with smooth talk. I think our husbands are not only susceptible to the physical appearance of a woman, but it seems that part of the way they're made up is that they really respond to words. And I thought, I don't want my husband to be put in a place where it's somebody else who's praising him. So, Lord, help me to notice things about him and then to express them, whether I express it verbally, in a note in his lunch, if I phone him at the office, or whatever, but help me to be able to express this.
to be able to tell him things I like about him physically, just about his appearance, his grooming, his walk, the things that that you find attractive about him. To appreciate him for what he does. I have a friend who's a widow. She's my age. And she said, I never realized how much Rod did. He kept the finances. He kept the cars running. He, you know, those kinds of things. And so I've just thanked, Roger, thank you so much for paying the bills. I have never had a flat tire. And that's because you've always watched closely to the needs of the car so that I'm not put in that kind of a situation. Thank you that you've given thought to planning for our family financially, and that you care about things around the home, that you show an interest in our home, that you fix things. Well, now these may not be the same things that you'd appreciate about your husband, but you can find things to appreciate. The things he does for you. It may be something like, I really like it that you share your ideas, or that you bring a letter from work to have me read over to see what I think about it before you send it out, or it really makes me feel a part. I like it that you take time for the children, or that you give that encouraging word, or that you really do hug me when you come home. I really appreciate it that you unloaded the dishwasher this morning. Thank you for the way that I see you care about your parents. I mean, it could be all kinds of things. Part of that praising him is to help your children praise him. To say, look what your dad just did. Isn't that neat? Or, you know, there are lots of dads who wouldn't be wrestling on the floor with you after work when they're tired. Give your dad a big hug. Isn't he special? Do you see what I'm... one woman that we were in Bible study for was complaining to me. Her daughter needed popcorn for a school party. And her husband got up early and popped the popcorn. And she complained because he left the kitchen a mess. And it's easy to do those kinds of things, to not notice the good and notice the bad and get bent out of shape. Who he is in his character. I just appreciate, Roger, that you are like a rock. I know I can count on you. You are dependable. You are steady. You're fun. I appreciate your wisdom. In a spiritual area, to be able to say, you know, what you shared with them, that was so excellent. Or, you know, your sermon this morning, that was a thought that really ministered to me. Where you're specific. Mentally, I appreciate about him that he's a reader, that he's a clear thinker, that he's objective. Do you see the kinds of things I might do? Then I would say, what I'd like you to do this next week is I want you to ask God to help you to notice things about your husband. And I want you to start a list, and I want you every day to communicate one thing to your husband that you appreciate about him. You can, when I've done this with women before, sometimes they've said, my husband would be absolutely unbearable if I started praising him. He would be impossible to live with. So try it. So anyhow, that would be the kind of teaching. We have a few minutes left. I've done things on how to build a spirit of harmony between your children. How do you help them when there's conflict? And so I would say to them, some parents say, they just have to fight it out. But I believe that my children will be roommates to somebody. They are going to be spouses to someone. And I want to teach them, what does the Bible say about resolving conflict? What is the godly way to go about it? And so I would share with them how to help your children resolve conflict. In that regard, I would also say you need to protect your children from one another. so that the older child knows that he has protection from you, from the younger ones. If he's on the floor coloring, it's not right that a younger one should come over and get in his crayons or tear his page. It's not right that a younger one should go in his room and pull things off his shelf. He needs to be protected from the younger one. The younger one needs to be protected from the older one. The older one's a faster talker. He can, you know, maneuver things. He can. So there are ways that you need to protect the younger one. And I think sometimes we have conflict in our homes because we leave them to themselves too much and we don't intervene in a way that builds certain skills. I talked with them about having a servant spirit in their home, serving their husbands and their children and Christ's example. And I would develop that. I've got 2 minutes. I'll get as far as I can in this. I had them close their eyes and imagine that they were in a wheelchair and that they just had a little bit of use of their hands, not fine motor coordination, but just more like this. I said, now wheel your wheelchair over to the refrigerator and open the refrigerator. Now you've got to do it in a way that you know your wheelchair is out there, and then you've got to wheel your wheelchair in close enough to get eggs out of the door of your refrigerator, and you get one and you put it in your lap, and then you're getting the other egg and it drops on the floor. You can't clean it up. That's going to have to wait till your husband or your children get home for you to get that other egg cleaned up. So you get another egg and you put it in your lap and you wheel your wheelchair back and you shut the door and you wheel over to the counter and you've got the bowl out and you crack one egg on the side and that works okay. You didn't get any shell in. And then you crack the other one and shell goes in and you don't have the coordination to get it out. So you've got to push that back and you've got to get another bowl and you've got to go to the refrigerator again. So I talked them through this. Johnny Erickson Tata said the one thing she can do for her husband is run errands for him because she can drive the van. And she loves whenever she can do an errand for him because she can drive the van. That's something she can do for him. She can't fold his underwear. Somebody else has to do that. She can't fix his meals. And I tried to help them see what a privilege it is to be able to serve our families. QB7, that was the Nazi war trials where they were having the trials against the Nazis who had done such heinous crimes against the Jews. And one of the things is they show footage of children. They separate the children from their parents, and then they conducted all kinds of horrible experimentation on the children, like hitting a child in the head with a baseball bat. How many hits before you notice brain damage and all kinds of things like this. And then the children would go be herded away again, away from their parents. And when I thought of that, I thought, it would be awful to go through those tortures, but then not to be able to go to your mother's arms and have her comfort you. And I thought, what a privilege it is to be able to serve our families when they need us. It transformed the way I thought of getting up during the night when my children were sick. Before, I'd lie in bed, I'd hear them coughing, I'd think, if they cough three more times, I'll get up. Maybe this was just one of those coughs in the night. Maybe it won't continue. And I'd say, oh, help them to stop coughing. And then finally, after the third cough, I think, well, if they cough once more, I'll get up, you know. And I thought, what a privilege to be there when they need us. So you can see the types of things that I might do in teaching. Our time's up. Leela, would you close us in prayer, please?